And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. You are in the second portion of the evening where I discuss a book with an author. And today's book is called Chakra Foods for Optimal Health. And our guest is Deanna Minnick. Welcome, Deanna.
Hi. Well, thank you for having me on the show.
So, I mean, this is a big holiday coming up, obviously, and it's tonight that you're eating. But I would like to talk about Thanksgiving and the holidays, because from now on, you guys were pretty much into holiday everything. So it would be really good to talk about what we can do to keep ourselves balanced. But tell us a little bit about how you got involved with this topic and chakra foods specifically and optimal health.
Sure. Well, I would say it goes way back. As a child, my mom was very much into healthy eating and, you know, really trying to drive home the principles of, you know, eating at home, eating, sitting down at a table with family and not eating a lot of processed foods. And so from a very young age, I started to think about this. And I have to admit that I wasn't really, I was kind of polarized to this, especially as a child, because you want to be eating everything that everybody else is eating, and I wasn't really able to. So it really got me thinking about food very early on, a lot of emotions around food. And as I went into, I always liked science, so as I was going through high school, I noticed I really liked biology, and I got into college, and I thought I was going to be a doctor, a medical doctor. And you know, there was a turning point where I realized that I really wanted to help people to prevent chronic disease. And I was trying to think, well, how could I do that? And I went back to my roots, which were in food. And in fact, my grandfather used to live on a farm. And so, you know, just this whole heritage. And you know, how do we bring more of that forth? So I decided to study nutrition. I went to graduate school and got my master's degree. I got my PhD in nutrition. And all along the way, while I was studying the scientific aspects of food, I was also studying yoga. And I was starting to study with spiritual mentors. And, you know, as a scientist and really being into looking into scientific principles, I think one of the things that's inherent in the personality of a scientist is the search for truth. And sometimes that's not always in the form of a double-blind, placebo-controlled trial. You know, you start to look at other things, and you start realizing that there's more here than meets the eye, and maybe we just don't have the tools, the measurements to get there, but there's a recognition of that. And so I started to put together my yogic background. I've been doing yoga now for about 20 years. And the idea of chakras, and chakras are simply, it's a Sanskrit word, that means wheel. These are the, refers to the energy centers of the body. And putting together this idea of chakras, the energy of the body, the subtle energy, the energy you don't always see with that of the physical body, which is what mainstream science is speaking to, and having the science and spirituality of eating and foods come together. And so as I was seeing clients, I was noticing that a lot of issues that were coming up with regard to food were connected to some core principles that are connected to chakras. So, for example, I'd be talking with somebody about eating and their emotions, and we would be talking about how they didn't like to eat foods that were high in fat. And so, you know, the connection there was needing fats to flow in the body and to get things moving, and it actually helps emotions to flow energetically. So, you know, I started to see patterns, you know, as a scientist, you start to look for patterns and trends. And so I launched this whole program called Nutrition for the Soul, which is a workshop in which you can go into the seven layers of the self and connect those different seven layers with how you perceive food and eating. And so I put out this book, Chakra Foods for Optimum Health, earlier this year as a way of getting the information out, because people that would go to the workshops would ask me, well, where can I read more? This is great. And, you know, there's something here. I want to read more. So Chakra Foods is a very practical book. It includes questionnaires in the beginning, so you can kind of figure out where are my energy imbalances.
Mm-hmm.
They're physical, spiritual, emotional, mental. And then from there, figure out, okay, well, now how can I bring that into my experience of eating and in my selection of foods? So long story to answer your question, but essentially it was a long path of really springing from my youth and in terms of bringing together the science and the spirituality parts. And I didn't mention as well, but as my mom was going through a lot of this healthy eating, she was also became very much into her faith. So I started to see that, wow, is there a connection here between food and faith, food and spirituality?
Hmm.
And it completely made sense to me later on. And you know, I think we're so busy looking for the next solution, the next diet book. And really, my approach is to look at food and eating as a lens to how you're living all of life. And by changing your eating and by changing the foods that you're eating to make gradual changes in your lifestyle, which will change the way that you walk in the world, essentially.
Right. Because you make a comment about how, you know, how we eat is how we're living our life. I mean, what we eat, if we're rushed and hurried or if we're stressed, and you know, it becomes an important awareness tool.
Absolutely. And in fact, that's one of the exercises I have people do in one of the workshops is, tell me what adjective can describe how you normally eat? And usually I hear from the audience, well, stressed or fast or hurriedly or I didn't eat enough or I ate too much. And then what I lead them down the path of is, well, now how does that word reflect how you're living? And then, you know, of course, everybody's eyes widen and, it's, you know, you start to see the connection there. And it's a constant reminder because eating is something that we have to do many times a day. So it's integrated into much of our lives. And so it's a really good tool to see how we're living and a really good kind of a check-in point.
Mm-hmm. And you talk, obviously, that, you know, eating is for our energy. And I think... a lot of us kind of get caught up and they're not really conscious or mindful eating. They're, you know, they just throw something back if they're really hungry. You know, we're very much a fast food culture. We want things immediately. We don't, you know, we don't want to spend time preparing with love. I mean, we do probably want to. We just don't feel we have the time to put into it. And so when you're thinking about eating for your energy and the vibration of our food, it's a very different concept for a lot of people. I mean, we really have to be much more aware, much more conscious as we're eating.
Yes. You know, I couldn't have said it better. That's really what many people are struggling with is, you know, fast lives, you know, we're not human beings anymore. We're human doings. We're always doing and acting and moving and, you know, having two parents working full-time jobs and then juggling kids' schedules. And, you know, it's going to be very tempting to go through the drive-thru of a fast food restaurant, of course, to pick up something to eat because then cooking and eating becomes just another thing you have to do. So what I some takeaways here for people, and you know, you can't jump into this and now all of a sudden start, well, you can if your schedule warrants it, but for many people it's very difficult to make that leap from moving on fast and overdrive to moving slow to medium on the lower gear. Mm-hmm. And so there can be some subtle things that you can do throughout the day to kind of take that pause and even if it's for just a couple of seconds. And, you know, I'm all about multitasking as well. You know, I think whatever makes you more that you feel like you want to do it. Usually people won't do something unless they feel like they're getting a lot out of it or that they're very efficient. And so one of the things that I mentioned, just as a little tip here, to bring us back to what you mentioned about being mindful. So two things. Number one, where do we interface with food? Two places primarily. Number one, the grocery store or wherever we get our food. and number two, the kitchen. And if we think about how we oftentimes go into the grocery store, it's in a rush. It's probably another thing we have to do on our way home from work or during the day running errands. And so we run in, and maybe, you know, we're not in the state of mind where we can make good food decisions for ourselves. And we're probably definitely not in tune with our inner self and our intuition and our sense of instinct. You know, that's another level which, you know, is probably further removed. And so one easy thing, well, I say it's easy, and you can try it for yourself, but what I recommend is to see the grocery experience as more of a meditative, contemplative, a place where you can actually, you know, some people just want to get away, just want to have some silence, just some time to themselves. And so to go into the grocery store with that mindset of taking a deep breath and making it very meditative and really, you know, not having your cell phone on and going through the aisles. And a grocery store especially has that kind of meditative quality because it's very labyrinthian, right? Especially if you're going through the inner aisles. And so, you know, just to walk around and to be breathing deeply while you're walking through the store. And, you know, especially if you're coming just out of work, you're probably rushed and a little bit stressed and breathing very shallowly. And so by breathing deeply, centering, focusing on your feet just to get centered and grounded, and then walking into the store and, you know, seeing this as fun. You know, I think food and eating can be, you know, that's what we're missing, is really the joy of eating, the sweetness of eating, the experience of community. And, you know, being in the grocery store and seeing all the stimuli, the colors, and, you know, really to see it as a kaleidoscope of so many different sensory pleasures, whether eyes or smells. And, you know, as much as you can to take yourself through the store, give yourself a time limit if that feels more appropriate, of like 30 minutes or, you know, whatever it is, so you don't feel rushed. And as much as you can, combine the grocery shopping with being mindful through the breath and through centering with your feet. And in the kitchen, you can do very similar things. And, you know, I'm very similar to everybody else. You know, I have a full-time job. And so my kitchen actually becomes my sanctuary. And I light candles. I light incense. I have, you know, my whole kitchen feels like where I'd want to be. Because if it was just all cluttered and, you know, just another thing I had to do, I'm not going to want to go in there. So I remember with one client, what I had her do is just completely reconfigure and paint her kitchen and redesign it. And it doesn't have to involve a lot of money. It's a matter of putting maybe little figurines, or, you know, like I have a little cat Buddha statue in the window, or plants, or gems, stones, you know, whatever makes you feel connected, and symbols or shapes that really resonate with you, with your kind of your inner self, your more meditative self. What I would say is just redo your kitchen. And for this woman that I had seen, she painted her kitchen and she was just amazed at how much she felt like going in there now. And she said, you know, this is my place. This is my space. And, you know, she would tell her kids, you know, when I'm in the kitchen, you know, not to come in and, you know, let me just be there and connect and be in my own world. And really, that's what people need as well, especially when they're so busy, is that alone time.
Yes, I think that, I mean, those are great points that I hope people think about when they're doing it. I'm thinking about myself when I go grocery shopping. Usually I'm hungry.
Oh, yeah, that's another point, sure.
Which is not really helpful. but no, I mean, that certainly, as you're talking about it, creates a completely different environment and a completely different mindset of what you're creating. I mean, the experience that you're creating creates a whole different feeling within you. If you can think about some of these like small things, really, but they're, you know, they'd be very powerful.
Yeah, there's subtle changes. And, you know, I think, again, to make a leap from living a fast life to a slow life is a large one. And so we, just by sprinkling in these little techniques, I think it can make a difference. And then what happens, it's like a ripple effect in a pond. You make a change somewhere in your life, and then you're going to see a change somewhere else. And if you make a change with food, since you're eating so many times, and the more you become aware of how you're eating and what you're eating, the more that's going to trickle on into how you feel and how you're living and what decisions you make. And to go back to your point, I don't want to not speak to this, but you had mentioned that sometimes or that many times you're hungry when you're going grocery shopping.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I mentioned with clients as well is to ensure that food is accessible, because I think that we forget to eat, which is, you know, and sometimes I even have to tell people that are in offices, you know, plan it on your Outlook calendar, you know, anything to remind you to eat, because if we're not eating, it's actually stress on the body. So not only are we having the external stress of everything swirling around us, but now we're not eating and giving ourselves the nourishment that we need. So again, you know, probably our decisions are not going to be as clear. And so what you can do is nuts and handheld fruit keep actually very well in the car, like an apple, like a Golden Delicious apple, or a pear. Sometimes you have to, of course, be careful. I usually put a pear in a baggie, and you can put that in the glove compartment as long as you don't forget about it. But nuts and trail mix are great, and even just to take a couple of bites before you go into the store and, again, ground and then make your way in will probably put you in a different place, because you won't be coming from a place of low blood sugar.
Right.
Where you might be craving more carbohydrates and more sugars and may make more decisions in the way of more processed foods that contain sugar. So that's just, I wanted to speak to that quickly.
Yeah, and also
it
makes you think of getting more processed food because you want something right away. You don't want to wait until you get home and cook for half an hour, but yes. So, okay, so let's talk about foods now, how they're capable of affecting, you know, us on many levels, and understanding them through our chakras, how that relates.
Yeah, so I love the quote from Adele Davis, and I have this quote in the book. Adele Davis, for your listeners who don't know who she is, she's a really a nutrition pioneer early on. Like, she was definitely ahead of her time. So in the 1970s and 80s, she was speaking to concepts about nutrition that people thought were just really too far-fetched. But now looking back, I'm thinking, my goodness, this woman had so much wisdom. So the quote that she has is basically that we are much more than what we eat, but what we eat can nevertheless make us more than what we are. And so what I believe she's speaking to, and at least the way I see it within the context that of my training and philosophy, is that, you know, there are many ways to look at food. And we can look at food as, okay, this is giving me energy, this is giving me ATP, which is the body's currency of energy, in order to do something. It's giving me calories. And most people are on the level of thinking of calories and fat and protein and carbohydrate. And those are kind of the building blocks of nutrition anyway. That's one way to see it. There are other ways to look at food. And one might be an emotional connection.
Mm.
And there is definitely a connection between food and mood, that our mood can determine what our food choices are, and the foods that we eat can also determine how we feel. And that's not a woo-woo concept. That's a very scientifically grounded concept, because the different foods that we're eating, whether it's the amino acids that we're getting from the protein that we're eating, can actually change what neurotransmitters our brain is making, which is going to lead to a different mood. So that's not rocket science, and that's pretty well known and established. So on that level, now, you know, just kind of looking from physical body up to emotions, we can change our emotions with that. So that's more of a subtle aspect to ourselves. And then what we know from quantum physics is that everything, all matter, has a vibration. And the vibration is basically the culmination of, if you think about all the little molecules, the particles that make up matter, we're not static beings. We're not stationary by any means. In fact, every molecule of us is dancing. And it needs to dance. It's kinetic energy. It's the neutrons, the protons, the electrons. We're like our cells, if you really drill down deep into our molecular structure, it's almost like we have the universe within our body. Because, you know, if you zoom in, if you look out at the universe, at the stars, it's almost like if you zoom into the body, you see the same kind of configuration of this complexity, this web-like structure, this, you know, everything is rippling through one another. And every thought we have, everything that we're doing, everything we're saying, even the words that we read, all of these things are information. And that information is going to trigger this whole cascade of different effects through the body and create some physiological outcome, whether we have a symptom or whether we have, you know, basically a cell moves some type of nutrient from one to the next, or some type of pH change, which speaks to our acid or alkaline balance. And so really, you know, if we look at ourselves as dancing molecules, and Maya Angelou has a great quote about that, if we look at ourselves in that way, in more of a quantum physics way, and then we look at food, which is living matter as well, you can imagine that the way that we assimilate that food into our being is going to change our dancing molecules, because we're bringing in new molecules that we're going to add to the mix, and we're going to change how our cells are speaking to one another, and ultimately how we look, how we act, and how we live. And so I think people don't realize the power of the eating experience, the fact that we are eating energy, we are eating these molecules that feed us with information. And it's not only the physical information of the pure calories, but it's the subtle information of all the interactions that go on. So just to take a quick example, if we think of organic food versus conventionally grown food, or let's just even take, you know, a dish that was prepared by an angry chef, somebody in the kitchen, very angry. You know, basically that the food, there's a relationship going on between the person preparing the food and the food itself, as much as the farmer from which the food is grown. You know, that connection. So basically, food becomes this a signature of everything along the way. It carries its own lineage, just like we do in with our ancestors and our background and our DNA. That food carries a similar lineage, and we can impart energy into that food. And that's actually been shown by Dr. Masaru Emoto, who's a Japanese researcher and who has written a number of books about the healing power of water and how water crystals change based on the words that are put on their containers that are holding the water. And since food is primarily made of water, our bodies are primarily made of water, you can imagine that what we're thinking, what we're feeling when we're preparing food or eating food is definitely going to make an impact.
Yes, definitely. Okay. I mean, you've given us lots to think about. I mean, it's really, I think that, you know, a lot of people aren't really conscious while they're eating. And I think, you know, because of the way we've sort of set things up, and I'm thinking of myself, and I know a lot of this stuff, and I still don't think that, you know, I'm eating consciously enough, which makes me start to wonder what I've been doing. So you did mention about organics versus conventional, and what about raw? I mean, a lot of people say that if you want to get the most nutrients, then you should be eating things that still are alive.
Yeah, and first I'd like to say that, you know, many people want to know, well, how do you eat? You know, and what tradition do you subscribe to? And when you bring up the idea of raw, what I'd like to throw in here is that I think it's really important. So before I address your question specifically,
sure.
I think it's really important to refrain from boxing ourselves in with labels on how we eat. You know, because when I teach a class, many times when I ask people to introduce themselves, even sometimes before they give their name, what they tell me is, I'm a raw foodist, I'm a vegan, I'm an omnivore. You know, that how we eat really defines us. And so, you know, I'm very careful with, you know, I think with food, the more we box ourselves off in terms of putting a label on ourselves and separating ourselves from our fellow people around us. And often what I say is, okay, let's let go of the boxes, the labels, and let's come together as a unified whole, because all of us have to eat as human beings. And how do we connect with each other through this experience? So with raw food, you know, there are, you know, if you can imagine that raw food and cooked food, yeah, they probably look a little bit different when it comes to the vibration of the food. And that's actually been shown under certain types of, using certain types of cameras, Carillion photography, and,
right.
you know, showing that raw food has much more energy extended out than foods that are cooked. So there is something there about the life force of food that, you know, I do agree that the more you're going to cook something and, let's just say, overcook, you actually introduce probably even more harmful molecules for the body in terms of creating inflammation in the body and aging. So, yeah, I think that there's definitely a place for raw foods. I think to have a blend of raw foods even and some cooked foods I think is nice, and to change that proportion throughout the year to mirror the external environment. So, but there are some nutrients that are only accessible or accessible to a greater degree if you cook the vegetable. So one example of that is carrots. So if we cook carrots a little bit and get them soft, what happens is the matrix of the carrot extends and opens up a little bit so that you can get more of the beta-carotene compound. And beta-carotene is basically what makes the carrot orange. It's the carotene. And it's a great antioxidant. It's great for the immune system and other things in the body. So, you know, and that's not with overcooking. I think light cooking... and there's been some research showing that the way to optimize broccoli's detoxification compounds is by steaming it 1 minute and 30 seconds. So it's almost like, you know, like when the broccoli turns bright green or when the carrot gets bright orange, I almost see that as a sign of, okay, that's the vegetable telling me it's in its vibratory, it's the highest vibratory signal it could create.
Right.
Now's the time to eat it. So indefinitely, you know, not overcooking, and not that I like to waste foods, but I tend to, if I'm at a restaurant, I try to get dishes that I know I can eat rather than large portions, because leftovers, I'm not a big fan of leftovers, because once that food has been prepared, what happens is, you know, it's almost like a descending curve. That energy of the food, the prana, the chi, the life force, whatever you want to call it, is essentially... on a decline.
Right. That's a good point. What about sending your food energy?
Yes, excellent point. And that's a great point even for people gathering around tables in the United States to have a Thanksgiving meal, and just any time, really. But you can definitely send your food energy. You can transform. If you're coming from a place of where you have a strong intention, you're definitely mindful, you can change the food's energy simply by thinking about it. You know, one of the things I like to do is before I eat and before I sit down with a group to eat, we all go around and state a one-word intention that we'd like to have infused into the meal. So, you know, nice. I might say something like, well, love, and then the next person might say community, the next person might say friendship. One word to anchor that meal's energy into. Whatever you feel that you would like more of, or that you would like to call into your space, you can definitely do that. And in fact, Masaru Emoto has shown that with a microwave, you also alter the vibration of food, but you can change that and reduce that, and I think even inhibit that from occurring if you apply an intention or a word to the food before you cook it. So, you know, the idea of blessings or grace or prayers or, you know, being in a state of meditation before eating is very powerful, because essentially what you're doing is you're blanketing that meal with the energy that you're bringing forth. And that's more powerful than the physical matter, in my mind, mm-hmm. and what I've experienced.
That's a really interesting talk we're having here. You talked a little bit earlier about emotions and how we eat. So can we talk about, you know, how we deal with emotional eating? Because I think a lot of people, do that, not consciously, but that, so what are some of the things that we can do, and working with our chakras, what are some of the things we can do? And I assume that has something to do with color as well, but one thing at a time.
Yeah, exactly. So this is, I must admit that if I have, at least the top of my eating issues, what I've had to work with is definitely emotional eating. And so I've crafted, you know, I feel a lot about this, and I've definitely created lots of tools to help people, and I address that in Chakra Foods for Optimum Health quite extensively. So if we look at the chakras, and we didn't really get into those just yet, but the emotional eating, the way I see it, really comes from the second chakra. So this chakra sits in the low belly. It's called the sacral chakra because essentially it's right below the navel and extends on into the body at the level of the sacrum. And so the sacral chakra really oversees the areas of creativity in the body. So for women, this would be the ovaries, the uterus. It also oversees the water element in the body, so the bladder, the kidneys, the all the fluid that your cells are bathed in. And so if we're not feeling and we're not expressing our emotions, and many times people just don't feel comfortable doing that for various reasons, whether there's kind of a stigma about women being angry or there's a stigma about men being sad. And maybe it comes down to what we talked about earlier in the call, Lori, with, you know, people just don't have time. It's like, okay, I don't have time to be angry right now because I've got to move on to the next thing, or I have to go to a meeting. I've got to go pick up the kids. I've got to do this. So it's almost like we don't have time to honor our emotions. And what I have learned about emotions and in working with groups and working with people and working with my own emotions is that emotions are like unruly kids. You know, they are going to stomp their feet and demand to be heard. So I think it's really important to acknowledge them in whatever form you can, because that's how we express and how we get them out of the body. And if we're not getting them out of the body, what happens is, and that's where emotional eating comes in. Usually people want to stuff the emotions down. Rather than feeling, they engage in eating to kind of stuff things in. And it's a very comforting thing to be eating, especially when people are emotionally eating. They're eating foods high in sugar and fat, which are going to be more tasty. And so what we do is we stuff all that stuff down there. And no wonder we end up with belly issues. We end up with IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, or ulcerative colitis, or inflammatory bowel disease, which is ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. So, you know, all those belly issues, you know, if our gut's not feeling right, there's a tendency for our whole body just to feel really, to feel off, to for us not to feel balanced and centered. And in the Asian tradition, our center of power is really our belly, our hara. And so some of the tools, you had asked the question of, well, what can we do about emotional eating? And the reason why I went into this a little bit is to explain, you know, really where it's coming from, that low belly area. And one of the things you can do is, you know, to put your hand on your low belly, to acknowledge that area, and to imagine with your mind's eye, just kind of closing your eye and connecting with that center, you know, what needs to come forth. And what the studies show is simply by understanding what you feel and making sense of it. So most people, when I ask them in a workshop setting, what do you feel? Let's go around the room, and I'd like everybody to say one word of what they feel. Some people kind of shrug their shoulders, kind of like, oh, I don't know. You know. Or some people give me intellectual responses, like, I'm feeling concentrated, or I'm feeling focused, you know, which are really words to describe the intellect rather than the emotional body. So if we can connect with our belly area, and number one, identify what you feel. This is half of it because, you know, it all gets to being aware, right? So if you can understand what you feel in that moment, and even if you start from the basic four, happy, mad, sad, glad. Okay, well, those are pretty generic. So let's say you come up with sad. Well, what about sad? You know, am I depressed? Am I full of grief? Am I, you know, just to really tease that out, because the more you tease it out, the more you dialogue with it, the more it's actually on its way to being expressed. And then you can take it forth. So number one is identifying the emotion. Number two, if you are feeling emotional, and usually an episode of emotional eating, there's some emotional event that precedes the eating. So what alternative can you substitute in the place of eating? So whether, you know, and I have a whole list of different things that you can do. You can go and take a quick, brisk walk. You can call a friend. You can journal. You can. One thing that works for me personally is music. When I turn on the radio and just blast it and just get into the space of the music, there's something about music that really connects with opening up our energy. And whether, you know, we let ourselves dance, and dancing is great because this chakra is all about movement. Whereas the root chakra, the one below it, is about being stable. The sacral chakra needs movement, and our emotions need movement. So if you think about what foods we can eat to promote movement, that would be things, believe it or not, in the fats and oils category.
Hmm.
So when I say fats and oils, it's the healthy fats, the fluid flowing fats, things like flaxseed oil, things like olive oil, for example, and also just water. You know, if you're not expressing emotions, you're at a meeting and you're feeling uptight and angry, have a glass of water and get things moving within, because maybe you'll need to go to the restroom and, you know, things start flowing in the body. You know, just any kind of movement that you can create. And I had mentioned early on that this chakra is really about creativity. So if you can spend some time, another great release for people to get emotions out is to engage in their favorite art form, whatever that is. For me, it happens to be painting. For a friend of mine, I know it's making music. Another friend of mine, it's writing poetry. Another friend of mine, it's going out and basically doing, she creates collages with magazine pictures. And so whatever speaks to you, you know, dive into that, because that's a way to get yourself to express. So long-winded answer to your question.
No, these are great, because it really gets you thinking. And it, you know, a lot of people do emotional eating, and so we need to be more aware of why and what's going on. And I think some of those questions are, you know, very relevant. So let's talk more then about the chakras. So we now know the second one, and we sort of know a little bit about the root. But why don't you tell us a little bit about that and how they sort of interface with our eating and our emotions, well, not our emotions, but just our eating, and how the vibration can impact us.
Sure. Okay, and to speak to emotional eating real quick, one thing that you had asked me and I didn't answer was what color?
Mm.
So each of the chakras, and we're going to go through that right now, each of the chakras, so each of the energy centers of the body, and this stems back to Ayurvedic medicine, which goes back thousands of years, mm-hmm. in terms of it's one of the oldest systems of medicine. And the way that they've mapped the body out is threads of energy running through. And so some more Western paradigms recognize these energy highways as the nervous system, but really I believe it's much more than that. We have kind of this, you know, the life force, the cellular intelligence kind of running through us. And there are certain parts of the body that we have these intersections where these threads of energy kind of come together. And those tend to be located along the spinal column, which makes sense because the spinal column is really, you know, it threads a lot of our nerves through our body and really does create a conduit of energy. So the root chakra is at the base, and it's right below the pubic bone, and it extends into the body at the level of the tailbone. And the root chakra, and what I think I'll do, and let me know if this is okay, I'll just kind of go through each of them and kind of give kind of the staple foods, and we can go deeper into any one after I've maybe gone through them. That might be a good way to introduce it.
Great.
So root chakra is about really the, it's about safety, it's about trust, it's about tribe, it's about tradition, it's DNA. It's basically the DNA in your cells. It's the skin. Anything that forms protection and boundaries, it's about the body. So muscle, skeleton, skin, anything that's made of protein in the body is usually connected to the root chakra. And so really a lot of eating issues are lodged in this area because, as you can imagine, we may eat because we don't feel safe and protected. And so what we may do is tend to overeat to really feel that sense of comfort, safety, trust. And, you know, Louise Hay and others might even say that, you know, by becoming overweight, indirectly, symbolically, what we're saying is that we don't feel safe. And that, of course, doesn't apply to everybody. But there may be some symbolism there between how we're eating, what we're eating, our physiology, our emotions, and kind of connecting that to the symbolism. So the root chakra is about grounding, and the foods that we ground through are protein. So think of protein. Protein is the building block of the body, makes up the hair, the hormones, basically all tissues in the body. And so this is, and some people eat to get grounded, to feel centered. And if we don't eat, sometimes we feel really scattered. We can't concentrate. We can't really focus on what we're doing. This is kind of the chakra that I see as the centering chakra, and we center through protein. And sometimes when people wake up in the morning, they feel really ungrounded. You know, number one, protein-containing shake of some sort would be great. Hmm. Also, all the chakras as we go up are going to be associated with different vibrations, and those vibrations are connected to colors. So the resonance of the root chakra is red. So red foods would also be great. You know, just wearing red clothing, looking at the red color red, would actually be great for helping you to ground. And also in a lot of red foods, we see the nutrient, the vitamin, vitamin C. And vitamin C is great for the adrenals, the adrenal glands. And the adrenal glands are about the fight or flight response, which is connected to the sense of the root chakra and survival. So then moving up from the root chakra, we have the sacral chakra, and we've already discussed that one. So this is about fats and oils, water. It's about orange foods. So I remember I was in a workshop, and one woman got very excited and said, the papaya. The papaya is a great sacral chakra food, and she said it's like the uterus. You know, if you split it in half, you can see the beautiful shape of the papaya kind of symbolizing the uterus. In a way, and then all the seeds in the middle, the orange, just the beauty of it. So tropical foods, coconut milk is great for this center. And I've got lots of recipes in the book as well. And one of them is kind of a tropical smoothie to nourish that center. Mm. And then moving up from the sacral chakra, and as I mentioned, that's orange. Then one level up, right under the diaphragm. So right pretty much in the middle of the torso, at the level of the stomach, we have the solar plexus chakra. And the solar plexus chakra is, it extends on through the body to the level of the mid-back. And this is our center of power, how we transform, how we process things. And from how we process, we create opinions or judgments or dislikes or likes. And so this is a very loaded center for many people. And what I mean by that is basically everything that we take in, whether it's a comment that somebody made or an experience from the day, our solar plexus is digesting that energy. Mm-hmm. And so any kind of digestive system complaints would be connected to basically how we're taking in things from the environment and how we're putting things back out. This is the center of exchange of energy. So what many people have nowadays is they're taking in, not able to put out fast enough. And so in Chinese medicine terms, this would be referred to as stagnation. So essentially, this center is about carbohydrates. So the root chakra is about the protein, the grounding. The sacral chakra is about the flowing, the fats. And now the carbohydrate center, the solar plexus, is about really the ability to transform, to get energy. And as you can imagine, you have a whole spectrum of different carbohydrates that would meet both the subtle energy and physical energy needs. So So something with complex carbohydrates, something high in fiber like legumes, would be great for harnessing and really giving you that energy you need in order to process things from the outside. And it makes sense because, you know, if you look at scientifically, blood sugar. So when the blood sugar dips, you know, basically needing that energy so that you can concentrate, that you can do things, that you can move around, and that the blood sugar response is very much controlled by the solar plexus, because under that area you have the pancreas as well, which is actually releasing insulin into the body after we have something that contains sugar. So the problem here is that people are eating too much sugar, and eating too much sugar will deplete your energy reserves. It sounds kind of counterintuitive. It's almost like, well, but I'm eating all this energy. How come I'm not getting energy? Well, you are getting energy, but it's very temporary. Mm-hmm. So what happens is it's kind of that quick burning energy where then all of a sudden you're just, you know, completely fatigued. So it's a sharp spike of energy, and then it's gone. And so this is the center that I think most people have issues with nowadays, and that's eventually seen by things like metabolic syndrome, type 2 diabetes, digestive mm-hmm. complaints. I mean, if you think about, Lori, you probably know a handful of people already. I mean, I'm already thinking about people I know with these types of conditions. And mm-hmm. what I relate it to is really this idea of not being able to process, digest the things around them. Mm-hmm. And really losing the sweetness of life because there is so much stress. And as a result, these people have sugar cravings, and then that gets into the neighborhood of the sacral chakra as well.
Right.
So, as you can see, there's a lot with that chakra.
Mm-hmm.
The next chakra up is the heart chakra. Oh, and by the way, the solar plexus resonates to yellow. So if you think of the sun, you know, mm-hmm. something radiant, something giving off energy, as much as, you know, being able to harness and wield that energy. So yellow foods, you know, legumes, lentils, things like that are just wonderful for that chakra. And then moving up to the heart, at the level of the heart, we have the heart chakra, which is connected to our feelings of love. And the emotions, when they make their way up in the body and come through the heart, this is emotional wisdom. This is compassion. This is the territory of forgiveness and giving and sharing food, donating food, eating with the hands, and really being in that space of love when it comes to eating and sharing food with others. And it really connects to vegetables, green leafy vegetables. And if you look at a bunch of kale or a whole bunch of spinach kind of, you know, bundled together, it's almost like the energy of the heart. It's very expansive. It's leafy. It's fresh. It's green. It's got this. It's got chlorophyll, a very basic energy receiver, which is a great antioxidant for the body. So cruciferous vegetables are especially wonderful because they contain compounds called phytoestrogens, which are great for the body in terms of helping with hormone balance. In many women, it's very helpful for breast tissue and keeping healthy levels of estrogen in the body. So this area is definitely connected to green vegetables. Moving up from the heart, we have the throat chakra, which sits in the throat area. And this is the area of the thyroid, of the mouth, of the ears, of the nose. And so you have a lot of senses here. And so this is about, you know, how we first take in things sensory, and are we paying attention to our senses when we're eating? And when we're eating mindfully, it's really speaking to our throat chakra.
Hmm.
So, you know, we wouldn't be talking while we're eating, per se, and trying to swallow and trying to gulp down some water all at the same time. This would really be congesting for the throat chakra and for our throat. So, you know, how do we streamline energy in and, you know, make sure that it's coming in? And sometimes, you know, I find myself, too, kind of gobbling things down and not taking enough bites. And then when you're not processing the energy properly in the throat chakra, what you leave your solar plexus to do is too much work. Mm-hmm. It's almost like you're just creating more energy in the body to process. So actually the throat chakra really helps the solar plexus chakra in funneling a lot of the energy from food in. The throat chakra, also real quickly, it's about how we speak about foods and how authentic we are in our approach to foods. So some people are pretty embarrassed if they eat a certain way, or, you know, they don't want to be different, or, you know, they can't speak their truth about eating. This is definitely an area of imbalance in the throat chakra. Then we've got the third eye. The third eye sits in the center of the forehead, right above the eyebrows. And the third eye is the center of intuition, of imagination, of wisdom. And this center connects to learning. It connects to the brain. It connects to the master glands in the brain, the pituitary gland, the pineal gland. And so nourishing our brain with foods is one level of this. The other level is listening to our intuition. And so many of us, it's almost like, well, what is intuition? You know, I can't even listen to all the noise outside of me. How do I listen to the voice within me? And, of course, that's what your program is about, is intuition and really listening to intuition. And I have one of my spiritual mentors had said about intuition that prayer is us talking to God and intuition is God talking to us. And really, the way I see intuition is it's our highest self. If we come from a place of wanting only the best for ourselves, this would be that voice talking to us. And so, you know, walking into the kitchen, closing the eyes, listening, you know, most times we're doing and we're not listening, and therefore we're not getting those intuitive messages. So I think it's really important to listen to your intuition with respect to food. But keep in mind, people tend to confuse intuition with impulse. And it's like, well, I'm craving chocolate right now, and I'm craving this cookie. And, you know, you have to really, if you hear it repeatedly, you know, niche, or, you know, you keep hearing you need some vegetable, rather than just moving that to the side, really connecting with that. And the more you listen and act on your intuition, as you know, the stronger it becomes.
Right. I'm not sure I've ever heard spinach in my mind.
Well, then you have to ask what voice. Then ask the voice, what voice is speaking to me if they're giving you all these other sweet foods. I've actually heard spinach. And
I bet you have.
That's why I'm connecting with spinach right now. But, you know, different people, different foods, of course.
Yes.
and interestingly, this center really connects with that of berries. So there have been studies at various universities where they show that compounds in blueberries make their way specifically into the certain areas of the brain that are connected to learning, which I think is fascinating, which shows that, you know, a lot of these berries, they're antioxidants. We kind of look at them generally as being good foods, but really they're very specific to certain parts of the body. Strawberries, for example, those compounds go to another part of the brain that's responsible for a different type of learning.
Right.
So I think it's fascinating. Mm-hmm. The last chakra is the crown chakra, and that sits at the top of the head. It's actually not really technically in the body, and interestingly, the connection with food is that it's about no food. It's about the lack of food. It's about cleansing the body of any residues or toxins left behind by food. So this is the center of purification, clarification. In ancient Ayurvedic traditions and in the spiritual texts, they talk about this as being our connection with our highest self or something greater than ourselves. God, source, whatever you choose to call that. So it's really about cleansing, purifying, fasting under appropriate conditions. It's about getting nourishment from things that aren't necessarily food, but they bring in energy, like the sun rays. And if we equate this to something in the body, it really connects. In chakra foods, I talk about the different body systems that each of the chakras are connected to. So things that contain vitamin D would really, such as the sunlight, which helps us to convert the pre-vitamin D in our skin, would help the nervous system, which is connected to the oversight of the crown chakra. So this is, and so there are various eating practices. It's not only the foods that you eat, but it's how you eat. In the book, I also have recipes for each of the different chakras. So if you're kind of at a loss as to, you know, how does this look? And I even have menu plans, kind of putting together a whole day's worth of balanced, subtle, and physical energy from your food. So these are all within the book so that it makes sense and it's practical.
Right. Wow. We could probably talk a lot about all of this, a lot more detail. And I might actually come up with a suggestion for us at a future time. But since we are running out of time a little bit, do you want to talk about Thanksgiving and the holidays and what we can do to make the meals a little bit less stressful or a little bit less challenging for our bodies?
Yes, I'd love to. Okay. And some of those things we've yes. already talked about, and I'll do a recap on those. I think one thing that I haven't mentioned, and I think it's really important, is to focus on the people rather than the food.
Mm.
Because especially as we come together to celebrate, you know, it really just being in the moment of the laughter, the conversation, the sharing, the hugs, and getting energy from that experience is incredibly nourishing. So focusing on the people, not the food, doing as much as you can to relax. So whether, again, it's deep breathing, you can do some simple grounding exercises, again, with the feet, kind of making sure that, you know, just visualizing your feet being connected to the earth, really grounding, and the breath also helps you to ground. Just kind of before you start your whole event, just kind of getting some space on your own, maybe 5 minutes, whether you'd like to do that through meditation, just by being still, journaling, just being basically in kind of your own intuitive space. And then I think when everybody's together, you know, to try that idea of setting an intention for the meal. You know, so nice. We all come together in thanks, and my individual intention for this meal is, and then you kind of state what that is. And that really helps for people to connect with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the creation part of the meal is great. I know I personally get a lot of energy from that, even though it can be perceived as stressful because you're thinking about all the people, and but really there's so much in the way of creativity. And so what can I do in terms of creating and not worrying about the outcome? Trying a dish that maybe you've never made before, and just seeing what happens, and letting your sacral chakra flow.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the quick hints. And I would say also with Thanksgiving, people tend to overeat.
Yeah.
And if you can, as much as possible, really tune into your body. In terms of, you know, have I gone too far? If you can get to the point where you don't feel stuffed. I mean, the word stuffed, and how we use that on Thanksgiving, we stuff the turkey with stuffing, and, you know, it's so much about being packed and full. You know, well, what about being no longer hungry rather than being full and seeing it differently, just even through our language?
Yeah, and I don't know if you talk about this, but is food combining something that you resonate with, or does it matter to you, or is it really just, you know, just being more mindful?
I think being mindful is the key, again, mm-hmm. because, again, the power of the thought, the word, the action is, you know, you can really override the energy of that food or whatever combination you're making. So I think to really be mindful, to really be happy in a state of celebration, it's going to make all of those molecules dancing just like your own.
Mm-hmm.
And I think another thing is the color. You know, when as I'm putting together my Thanksgiving meal, I'm thinking about the colors of the food, because I think it's really important to ensure that we're eating red and orange and yellow and green and the blue-purple foods. And, you know, having a nice mix of those rather than brown, yellow, and white, which is what most people eat, which, you know, definitely feeds a certain vibration, but doesn't give us the complexity of vibrations that we need for our whole being.
Right. Nice. I also hear that you have an ebook coming out. So let's talk about that.
I do, yes. And for your listeners that are, if they go to my website, which is www.foodandspirit.com, food and is spelled out, and spirit.com. And if you sign up for my newsletter is free, and I send out sometimes recipes, tips, the latest news, kind of, again, weaving together scientific and spiritual information. If you sign up for the newsletter on the website, what I will do is send you a complimentary copy of an e-booklet that speaks to nourishing the chakras.
Nice.
So some of the concepts that we talked about today will be covered in the book, as well as others that we did not go through. So that may be, so what I'll do is it'll be emailed out when I receive your email.
Nice. Wow, this has been a delight. You have a wealth of knowledge that I would really like to have you come back and talk about more in depth and maybe a little bit more frequently. So let's put our thoughts together on how that could be a possibility. And it was a great pleasure.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure to speak about this information and to help people as much as possible to shift into a new way of eating. So however I can be of service would be great.
Great. Well, thank you. And have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.